Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other... Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity, the highway to north, this is Safety Wars for Monday, June 24th, 2024. How's everybody doing? I hope you had a great and productive weekend like I had. A lot going on out there. I'm trying to refine my rhythm here. It's kind of hard with all that's going on. I know some of the other live broadcasters have had issues going on live. Just a lot of stuff going on out there. If you're interested in working with us, give us a call at 845-269-5772 for Safety Wars. Yeah, we've got a lot of training classes coming up, some pretty significant stuff we're working on. And I tell you what, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about today. My wife was like, well, you know, do you really want to go on today? I said, you know what, I got to go on today. You people mean too much to me. Especially, a lot of people are looking for calm out there, and I've been told I'm very calm. Like, really? Safety Wars? Calming? I don't know. We'll find out. Now, we're going to have an exclusive commentary here. So I come across, one of my favorite websites is studyfinds.org. And I see something that came across here that I've been talking about for probably around 25 years. And for disclosure, I used to be a lead-based paint, a lead risk assessor for the state of New Jersey. I was state licensed lead inspector risk assessor. When I worked for Envirogenics and the late great Jeff Olcott, I became the lead guy, the in-house lead guy. This is in the mid-90s. And I got thrown on a lot of lead cleanups. Some of them were in residential housing. One of the biggest ones, took several years, was for 40 family housing in West Point. That was the name of the project. I think it ran from 94 to 97. Where it was 40 family units where lead was identified inside the home. And to just say, it was my first experience with an organization, that being the Army Corps of Engineers, we'll just say things could have been managed a hell of a lot better. I will leave it at that. I've commented on this before, about 2, maybe 3 years ago, I took my family to a Rockland Boulders game. That's the local minor league team here in town. No, there's one town over in Pomona, New York, not Pomona, New Jersey or Pomona, California, Pomona, New York. And they had military personnel there that day, and I started talking to the family that sat next to me, and they said, what do you do? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I worked up at West Point about 25 years ago, blah, blah, blah. I'm familiar. Yeah, we lived in such and such a place. They said, we had this big thing with lead on the site. Do you know anything about lead? And I said, "Do I know about lead?" So when you're dealing with an organization like West Point, or it could be any other major government organization that has a reputation, they don't like that reputation tarnished. And one of the things was they decided that they were, and the powers that be decided, apparently, that they were going to follow their specifications on lead, which they wrote, or someone in their organization wrote, and they were inadequate. But the thing was that they were going to, my opinion, based on my experience there, they were trying to blame other people for lead removal. So we were contracted to remove lead removal on the site. I was the supervisor for the lead removal, doing all of the sampling. This is on all the old housing units there, called 40 Family Housing. It was on West War Loop and Biddle Loop, that area, if you're familiar with West Point, that neighborhood over by the PX, what was used to be the PX. Four of the units are not there anymore. But that, you know, for whatever reason, last time I was at West Point, I drove through there just to show my kids where I worked. And what we ended up doing was, I think that they were planning on us not doing things properly and then sticking us with the lead issues there. That's what it looked like. I don't know. I can't judge. No, back then I would have said, well, definitely that's what they were doing. But now, 30 years later, you're like, well, you know, human beings are human beings. We know about human and organizational performance. But anyway, what happened was my boss said, "Jimmy, this is what you're going to do. You're going to go and you're going to take soil samples from around all of the housing units, and you're going to, you know, take double the minimum level that you need, the minimum amount that you need for analysis. And what you're going to do is you're going to send those out to the laboratory and tell them to hold them. And we'll pay rent and everything to the laboratory to hold them for a couple of years till the job is done. And this is what I always recommend people do when they're dealing with lead removal on a site, right? Because what's going to happen is they're going to say that we put the lead there because of improper removal. And now that's how we handled it. And lo and behold, several years later, when the job was over with, what ended up happening, right? Nothing official, but, you know, no. And I said, well, we can send everything out for analysis. They've been in the laboratory for 3 years, 4 years. Maybe why don't we run those? And then all of a sudden, everything got dropped because they know that would have been there prior. Now, the question is this. This is the abstract from the article that I'm reading here off of Study Finds. It referenced an article in GeoHealth. It was a policy paper. 1 in 4 U.S. households likely to exceed new soil lead guidance levels by Gabrielle M. Filippi, right? Or Filippi, sounds like. Et al., and there's several authors on here. The website was published on the 18th of June, that's last week, doi.org/10.1029/2024GH001045. I have a link to it in the description of the program. So here we have, lead exposure has blighted communities across the United States and the globe, with much, and this is the abstract, much of the burden resting on lower income communities and communities of color. We know that from Flint, Michigan situation and other situations throughout the Jacksonville, Mississippi, and some of the other areas of the country. And there's lawsuits and criminal proceedings and everything else associated with that. On the 17th of January 2024, the U.S. EPA lowered the recommended screening level of lead in residential soils from 400 to 200 parts per million. I believe we covered that on our show. Our analysis of tens of thousands of citizen science collected soil samples from cities and communities around the U.S. indicates that nearly one quarter of households may contain soil lead that exceed the new screening level. Extrapolating across the nation, that equates to nearly 30 million households needing to mitigate potential soil lead hazards at a total cost of $290 billion to $1.2 trillion. Reason why they give that number is that they don't know how deep it goes and the extent. If you're going to do lead remediation at a house, differing state laws, local laws, disposal fees, depths of soil, things of that nature. We do not think this type of mitigation is feasible at the massive scale required, and we have instead focused on a more immediate forest-fever strategy, capping current soils with clean soils and or mulch. Okay, some of the other, now that's what the article mentions. There are some other things that you have to do other than that. All right, capping is, right, good, a good way, cheaper strategy, more immediate, easily done, right? But then you have to have like a use restriction there, which is going to be kind of hard to enforce. Also, what people try to do is that they put not nice plants over the top of it. So you're not going to put your vegetable garden over the top of this, especially something like a tomato plant that's going to bioaccumulate lead there. And I know that there are some ways of removing lead from the soil and treating the soil. Just treating the soil with biological type things. Now, okay, there are, so the other thing, the not nice things you put on there, sticker bushes is one of them. At a fraction of the cost and labor disrupted soil mitigate. Okay, great. But then that has to be monitored and everything else over the years and indeed restrictions and things of that nature. Now, the question is this, right? And you could go look this up and, you can look up the hazards of lead, which are many with that. IQ impacts children are at high risk. And, this is time immemorial. You know what all this does here, especially if you're a health and safety professional. Now, how does the lead get there? Several ways. Back in the 1970s, we had lead in gasoline. And in New Jersey, at least, up until 1988, I remember this, the summer of 1988, because I graduated high school that year. They had, and I had a truck that needed lead gasoline. My first vehicle needed lead gasoline. And what ended up happening was they got rid of lead in the gasoline then. And a lot of emissions from cars, especially in the inner cities where people are sitting there for traffic, for example, a lot of this stuff would accumulate in the soil, right? And in the inner city, you have highways going through residential neighborhoods, things of that nature. And also a lot of the areas alongside of highways also had accumulations of lead. For example, the New Jersey Turnpike. For years, if you're going to work on the New Jersey Turnpike, you would have to go and do a little bit of testing, maybe a little bit of remediation. That all had to come into effect there. All had to come in there. And also, that was a different type of lead, tetraethyl lead, right? With that. Now, around houses, where did that come from? That came from before, I believe it was 1980, 78, 80, something like that. The lead was in interior paint. Lead continued to be in paint for a long time after that because you had old stock and some exterior paints might have still had it. People bringing home paint from work. I know highway paint often had lead in it because, it was good caulking were with that and it was better paint as far as protecting surfaces. And there's a whole litany of arguments for it. But what happens is it's in your house and paint chips. People do not maintain their paint, especially if it's you're in Section 8 housing or some type of government-assisted housing. Paint chips would fall off the walls onto the ground, and then the little kids running around, right, and they're most concerned between the ages of 6 months, 6 years, because those are usually the ages where kids are on the floor and they're putting things in their mouth, right? There's a lot of exploring, you know, hand-to-mouth contact, and children getting lead poisoning and impacting them for the rest of their life. I could go on for a long time, and I do have a lead 1926-62 video, which I'll probably put in the comments here, explaining lead and everything, and that's available for purchase here. But anyway, how did it get on the outside? They're mentioning outside, not so much the inside. So you had houses that were painted with lead paint. So water gets on the paint from the rain and from the weather, and paint chips fall down, and it also washes down because exterior paint often caulks, meaning, you know, with a painted surface, you clean it and it looks like new, right? And that sort of accumulates in the soil. Now, it's because a runoff now immobilizes lead in the soil, on the surface soil, and often it ends up, where do children play back in the day? Outside. They're playing outside in contaminated soil. Now they have an issue with that. So what's the what this guy did, what these folks did was they solicited soil samples. Now, what we end up having to do here with all of this stuff, what do we do about it? Now, laws in all of the states require disclosure of potential lead-based paint hazards. If it's commercial property, you may have to have a audit done of the property, phase one or phase two audit, where they go and they identify the environmental problems. This may be in there, included in there. And they end up, it's a case-by-case basis. So, I don't know what to tell you here with this. Just that if you have any concerns, absolutely get your soil tested with this. And, you know, get a qualified contractor. If your state has a licensing program, that's a good place to start, is with licensed people with this. Now, something else I want to point out to you, unlike biological cleanups like mold and everything, it's a little bit harder to fake these samples if it's done by a legitimate company. Biological samples, believe me, I can tell stories on that, but that's not for this show. So that's what I wanted to talk about, was lead in there. And this article, I thought it very interesting. Now, this is from May 2nd. The Biden and Harris administration announces $3 billion for lead pipe replacement to advance safe drinking water as part of investing in America. So, again, the administration is funding a lot of stuff. This is from to remove lead drinking from the drinking water supply. So now that is an issue. We're going to go to a commercial break, and we will come back to you.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Polzel, a veteran safety expert with over 3 decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant, that's Safety Wars. Join a safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos.
Now, hold on.
You are listening to Safety Wars. Tomorrow's safety today.
Now, over the weekend, the Drudge Report and several other websites started talking about World War III. Here's just some of the things, and they're from some legitimate news outlets, mainstream here. Here we have from Newsweek, MAGA slams Ukraine strike on Crimea, World War III in overdrive. Here we have the Express, North Korea sends chilling new World War III warning to U.S. as Ukraine tensions explode. The UK Mirror, World War III fears, hotspots that could spark nuclear Armageddon. World War III coming soon, and this is from National Interest. Putin makes a new nuclear war threat over Ukraine. And it goes on and on and on and on. Some of the, a lot of it from conspiracy theory type things coming up, but some of them from legitimate mainstream news outlets. Now, here's my question for you. What are you going to do about it? What are you, the listener, you, the viewer, that I'm pointing to right here. Hello, hello. What are you going to do about it? I came out with a book several years ago on, I keep on wanting to reissue it, but I have some other stuff I want to reissue. Nuclear terrorism. I'm going to tell you this. There are people out there today that think that you could survive a nuclear war. Now, as I pointed out in the book that I wrote, there is no telling how big a nuclear war is going to be, a nuclear exchange is going to be. There is no telling what your situation may necessarily be. Right here, I'm surrounded by several targets. And it's not Jimmy saying this. This is what the old FEMA maps are and just common sense. FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, did have maps that came out towards the end of the Cold War. I don't believe that they've been updated since 1990. There was another book that came out called Strategic Relocation. Hold on, let me get the author. Strategic Relocation by Joel Skousen, right? Still available on Amazon. I have a copy of the original book. One of the things that I laugh about, it's now in its fourth edition. One of the things I laugh about was, and I used to bust my wife's chops a little bit, was when we first got married, I moved into her condominium, and it said, do not be closer to New York City than Route 287 in White Plains. Well, where did we live? Right next to Route 287 in White Plains. I said, hon, we got to move like a quarter mile up the road here. So I would bust her chops a little bit. But we're surrounded here, where I live in Clarkstown, New York, New City, New York, by several targets here, secondary targets. Well, obviously, the primary would be like New York City, right? That's you could see it from some of the roofs in town, and you could see it from South Mountain, which is on the other side of town here. You could see New York City, and probably the initial blast from something there would not reach us. We're about 30 miles away, I think, 25 miles away. However, what else do we have here? Well, we used to have Indian Point, which is a little bit closer, other side of the Hudson River. And there was one house when we first got married we were looking at, and we said, man, this house is cheap and it's big, but it's got to be some catch to it. So we went into the house, and if you wanted to get a perfect picture of, we went to the open house. If you wanted to get a picture, perfect postcard picture of the Indian Point and the nuclear reactors, that was from that kitchen window. I mean, you could have made a fortune on one of the Shutterstock, I think it is, or one of those with were selling pictures of Indian Point. But that's one. Second one was we have the Kensico Dam right on the other side of the river. Again, major dam. Not too far away. For on this side of the river, what do we have? We have West Point, 20 minutes north from here. We have a pharmaceutical plant, Pfizer, right on the other side of the county here. We have a huge industrial park with some aerospace companies in it. Those are the big ones around here. Even if you go out to, let's say, Sussex County, New Jersey, you have a lot of vaccination plants over in Swiftwater, Pennsylvania, in the Poconos, so you wouldn't be safe. There are some other facilities there that are high. You know, Picatinny Arsenal comes to mind, and a couple of other facilities there that would be that. So, again, what's the point here? What's my point? Where am I going? It sounds like you're rambling, Jim. What you need to identify, what's the target if you're near a target, number one. Number two, you have to prepare for yourself. That's what the whole point of my book was. You cannot personally set United States policy or reaction. You can't do it. What can you do? What am I going to do to protect myself and my family, myself, my family, my neighborhood, my community? What can you do? And that's how you have to approach this. What can you do? Could you prepare? And then move out. As you know, and people have commented, well, this sounds like a team proposal, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it is a little bit, but you know, if your last name is Smith, make it Team Smith. Because you have to be responsible for yourself and your family and what you can impact. And you can have the biggest impact in your family and in your community, not at the national level. Here I have an audience. I can impact a little bit. Just a little bit. And here on Safety FM, a little bit more. But what are you going to do? What FEMA tells you to do, it has said multiple times, unless they've updated things in the last couple of years, is that you have to be prepared for up to 96 hours on your own. And the worst case scenario that FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, is prepped for is a 3 kiloton, which is about half the size of the Hiroshima Nagasaki atomic explosions. 3 10-kiloton explosions in the United States in one day, right? That's what we're equipped to deal with, worst case scenario. You have hundreds of bombs going on, or dozens of these big theater, I guess is what they call them, nuclear weapons going off in the megaton range, right? Or in the 100-kiloton range. There's not a whole hell of a lot the government's going to do to save you. Just the way it is, folks. They're going to be on overload. But again, you don't know what situation you're going to be in. And that's what my second message for today is you need to go and prepare for yourself, your family, and everything else, what you're going to do and how to prepare. If you can get an old copy of my book, that's good. Thinking about republishing it. But there are other references out there. But the thing is, how long does it take for you to prepare for this stuff? Minimum 2 weeks. Minimum. And that's working a 40-hour week to get this done. All right? Now that's about how long it takes to prep. Like the movie The Day After from the 1980s with Jason Robards, among other actors there. Steve Guttenberg, I think, was in that movie. No, they think, well, you know, everyone's prepared after a couple of days. No, yeah. No, not really. It takes a long time to prepare. For Safety Words, this is Jim Polzel. We're going to go to our second commercial break.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War Show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Polzel and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
All right, we're going to start a little section here because it does matter. We talk about demographics here a lot. I tell you what, I'm going to take a break for a second here. I'll be right back. Let me put on some commercials here. Hold on. Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that actually addresses your hazards in your workplaces and is not standardized baloney from 25 years ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call Jim Polzel at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you're receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
Okay, I'm back. Allergy season, it's killing me here. I apologize for that. Now, we talk about safety in the news, things of that nature, environmental issues, just like we did with the disaster preparation, but every once in a while, we have to cover some of the other agencies out here, because I find this very interesting. If it's not interesting to me, I don't really like to discuss it, to be honest with you. Supreme Court rules against California woman whose husband was denied entry into the U.S. So we're ending the term for the Supreme Court, and they've issued a whole flurry of cases and decisions. So this is from last Friday. Supreme Court on Friday ruled against a California woman who said her rights were violated after federal officials refused to allow her husband into the country, in part because of the way his tattoos were interpreted, and essentially they believe he was a gang member. With that, so this is from Justice Amy Coney Barrett, reading from the bench, the majority opinion, right? While Congress has made it easier for spouses to immigrate, it never made a spousal immigration a matter of right. While a citizen certainly has a fundamental right to marriage, Barrett said, it is a fallacy to leap from that premise to the conclusion the United States citizens have a fundamental right that can limit how Congress exercises the nation's sovereign power to admit or exclude foreigners. The dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor said denying citizens the right to seek specific reasons about why their spouses are denied entry gravely undervalues the right to marriage in the immigration context. All about separation of powers is one of the things here with this. If you want a different outcome, Congress is going to change the law. Our next Supreme Court case. Supreme Court rejects a settlement on water dispute between New Mexico and Texas. The Supreme Court, this is on Friday, rejected a settlement between Western states over the management of one of North America's longest rivers. In a 5-4 decision, the justices ruled that the water-sharing deal between Texas and New Mexico can't go through because the federal government still has concerns about New Mexico water use on the Rio Grande, which Colorado also draws from. Having acknowledged those interests and having allowed the United States to intervene to assert them, we cannot allow Texas and New Mexico to leave the United States up the river without a paddle, said Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. I believe that's no disrespect. I don't believe that's how you pronounce the name, but the way I pronounced it. Right, reading the majority opinion, which crossed ideological lines as it was joined by Justices Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, Brett Kavanaugh, and John Roberts. So they had a water sharing deal. They rejected it. Again, water, major situation out west. With everything. Okay, World War III. I mean, you got all, I have all these stories on world, potential World War III. Again, this is madness what some of our world leaders are saying about this. Just absolute madness. Here we have NASA predicts an asteroid has a 72% chance of hitting Earth, and here's when. In a hypothetical scenario posed to group posed to a group of nearly 100 government representatives, NASA found that their plan to combat the asteroid hurling towards Earth has several high-level gaps. They say space officials have limited readiness to quickly implement needed space missions. Methods to keep the public informed on the impending disaster are not fully developed. So, participants from federal agencies going on. So, this was a meeting, an exercise on a hypothetical asteroid. NASA has found a hypothetical exercise that an asteroid has a 72% chance of hitting Earth and may happen sooner rather than later. Okay, well, when? In their hypothetical scenario, an asteroid will collide with the Earth in 2038, 14 years from now. The collision would have a 47% chance affecting more than 1,000 people and an 8% chance of affecting more than 1 million. So basically, this is all hypothetical. Don't get upset. We all know that they're not prepared. I mean, somebody on, I tell you, we have people who listen to this show here, because I say things here that all of a sudden, a couple of months later, end up in the news. Like, we broke the story on the fraudulent COVID vaccination cards. That was us and Jay Allen, 3 months before everybody else. Some of the other things with batteries, the lithium ion batteries. If you saw the big fire in Seoul, South Korea today, it's incredible on the news. The lithium battery factory. And now we're ahead of things, especially with these news releases, because nobody else reads them. But we were ahead a long time ago on government preparation for disasters. We mentioned the book before that I wrote, but also starting with the anthrax cleanups. And even before then, there were indications on the environmental cleanups. So again, this all goes down to this. They're not prepared to do this. What, COVID, right, was the worst example of not being prepared for a pandemic that they had been predicting since 9/11. They, meaning the government, FEMA, Centers for Disease Control. So what it comes down to is this. They, you need to be prepared yourself. And again, I don't know what you're going to be able to do. You get an asteroid strike. I mean, it did kill the dinosaurs 65 million years ago, according to many scientists. And this is, well, what are you going to do with this? And what are you going to do? What are you going to prepare? And that's the lesson for the story. And as I had asked during the question and answer period at the Cape Canaveral, when they had an astronaut up there, his name, it was a Polish name, it was a medical doctor, was a medical doctor when John Glenn returned to space. He had said, I had asked him, well, what can we do to help support the mission of NASA? And he said, it's funding, and you got to talk to your congressman or congresswoman. I said, okay, well, that's good for us to know that. Now, we're going to go right now. I'm going to throw on another commercial break here. It's Monday, so a hop message for Monday. This is Safety Wars, broadcasting to our brothers and sisters in the occupied territory of behavior-based safety. Get out your secret decoder ring. Here is your nightly message.
Human error is normal. Human error is normal.
So we're going to do some press releases here from the EPA and the Department of Labor. And here. And this is from the EPA. All right. EPA publishes its 2024 to 2027 climate adaptation plan. Today, June 20th, this was from last week, the U.S. EPA releases a climate adaptation plan, which describes the agency actions to address the impacts of climate change and build work for climate resilient nation. This is one of the things, pardon me, that I actually do agree with. Now, climate change is happening, always has happened, will continue to happen. But what we need to do is focus, my opinion, focus on what we're going to do, how we're going to adapt to it. Mitigation of it, too big of an issue. A lot of problems with the science behind it and the policy behind it, which we have covered on this program in February of 2023 and March of 2023 with people from the other side of the argument here. Now, what are they going to do? Building facility resilience. Good choice. Fostering a climate-ready workforce. Education and training, right? Right. More information does not make us stupider, right? We're better off with more information. Developing climate-resilient supply chains. Integrating climate resilience into external funding operations, external funding opportunities. All right, so EPA has included an assessment of climate risk as part of its overall supply chain risk management. Again, we know about supply chain problems. We've been through the pandemic, folks. Applying climate data and tools to decision-making, EPA is equipping communities and recipients of financial resources with all the tools, data, information, technical support they need to assess their climate risks and develop climate resilience solutions. Okay. Integrate climate adaptation in the rulemaking process. Another good thing with that. And again, I realize that there's some debate on the impacts of that. I get it. But I think this is more of a, this is a better approach than on the other end. This is something that we could do that has measurable results, not theories where we're going to spend trillions of dollars with very little impact to anything. And that's the best scenario. Here, okay, well, we're going to do this. I mean, we're going to do this type of thing. I mean, sea levels have been rising. We know that. We know that over the last, since the end of the last ice age, sea levels have been rising. Right where I'm sitting right here. Right here in Clarkstown, New York, we had over a mile thick glacier. We know that. This is a scientific fact. We know that southern New Jersey and a lot of these other coastal areas, they had rising and declining sea levels. We understand that because we have sand and clay in the sedimentology of the South Jersey and most of New Jersey. I mean, where I grew up in Woodbridge, and I'm sorry I don't have pictures of this from when I was growing up, but we had in Woodbridge, we had where the Woodbridge Center Mall is, that was all clay pits. Now we know we had that. So where are we going to go from here? And EPA recommends that people in the Great Lakes region prepare now to avoid potential exposure this summer to wildfire smoke. Maybe I need to redo the program from last year, repost it, where we talked about this stuff. U.S. EPA is encouraging residents in the Great Lakes region to be prepared. Again, what's the theme? Be prepared for wildfire smoke this summer. EPA advises everyone to stay informed about local air quality and put plans in place to reduce their exposure to wildfire smoke and protect their health. Although big wildfires may be hundreds, if not thousands of miles away, recent years have taught us that we should be ready. So what are they ready for smoke? Several wildfires in the United States and Canada are becoming bigger and more frequent. Last summer, Canada experienced a record number of wildfires. Yeah, I remember that. If you wanted to experience how the 1970s were before the Clean Air Act that probably was a pretty good thing. So here is the following steps. If you don't have an air conditioner and it's too warm to stay indoors with closed windows, seek shelter with friends, relatives, or at a local public building with air conditioning, such as a movie theater, mall, library, or clean air shelter. Keep a supply of N95 or P100 masks to wear. Now, let me point out something. If you are an employer and you're handing your employees N95 or P100 respirators, they have to be trained on how to wear them. And they need to sign off on Appendix D of the Respiratory Protection Standard 1910-134, 29 CFR 1910-134. Consider buying a portable air cleaner and make a do-it-yourself air cleaner. Learn how to adjust your HVAC system. Replace filters according to manufacturer's recommendations in those HVAC systems. And ensure children, older adults, pregnant people, formerly known as women, I said that, and people with asthma or other lung or heart conditions have at least 5 days' worth of medication and food on hand to avoid going outside. People with asthma or other lung or heart conditions may consider developing a medical action plan in consultation with a healthcare provider along with an evacuation plan if heavy smoke persists for several days. And EPA has several resources on this whole thing. Okay, we're just racing through here. This is from my neighborhood here. United States announced a settlement with Westchester County drinking water provider and three municipalities for violating the Safe Drinking Water Act. The EPA, June 24th, that is today, the EPA, along with the Department of Justice and the United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York, announced a settlement with the Westchester Joint Works Water Works, the town and village of Harrison, the village of Mamaroneck, and the town of Mamaroneck, collectively the defendants, for violation of the Safe Drinking Water Act in 2019 due to the presence of contaminants that are known to threaten public health and the public water system in excess of the level set by the EPA, and thereafter they violated an EPA administrative order. Always a bad thing, bad idea, requiring the construction of a water filtration plant by specified deadlines. Hold on 1 second. Allergies are killing me here. So they ordered, I mean, it's always a bad idea to violate the Safe Drinking Water Act. Obviously, it's a real bad idea. But when the government tells you to do something and puts you under a consent order, I think you should probably obey it. So they're building a drinking water filtration plant that will ensure safe drinking water here for 120,000 Westchester County residents. So what do they exceed? Five regulated haloacetic acids, known as HAA5. Those are byproducts from disinfectants, and they have with an association of bladder cancer and a suggested association with colon and rectal cancers. Additionally, exposure to chlorinated drinking water disinfection byproducts may cause adverse developmental and reproductive effects, and there's a fine associated with this. Now, let's be fair. Because you get a lot of people out there screaming and yelling, chlorinated water. I remember this fact when I was in school. Chlorinated water. My opinion, Jimmy's opinion here, right? I don't think that the chlorinated water ranks right up there with the creation of fire. More lives have been saved because of chlorinated water than anything out there. So, just the way it is. So, I tell you what, we're probably not going to be on the air tomorrow, but we're going to throw Hop Message 2 here. And I'm going to set up, we have a new segment here we're going to try to do, is because that we're going to try to release it as a reel or something on social media, the safety message for the following day. So if so today is Monday, June 24th. Now we're going to talk about the June 25th, 2024 safety meeting here. And this is what we got. Safety message. And this is Jim Poelzel with Safety Words with your safety message for Tuesday, June 25th. 2024.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
So, ladder safety. Ladders are common tools in many workplaces and at home, but improper use can lead to serious injuries. Here are some essential tips to ensure ladder safety. Choose the right ladder. Select a ladder that is appropriate for the job. Ensure it is tall enough so that you don't have to stand on the top rung. As for an A-frame or a step ladder, check the weight capacity to ensure it can support your weight plus any tools. Inspect it before using. And again, if you're a fall protection competent person, this is usually your responsibility to have the ladders in an inspection program. And if you are a user of it, do a pre-use inspection. Before using a ladder, inspect it for any damage, such as cracks, bends, or missing parts. Ensure the rungs are clean and free of all oil and grease to prevent slips. Set it up properly, right? So for every 4 foot up, it has to come 1 foot out. And if it's an extension ladder, right, other than a step ladder, needs to be secured, right? Makes sense? Needs to be secured with that. And the top run, you got to go 3 rungs above your surface that you're going to, because you're not supposed to work off an extension ladder, right? And you may have, if you do, you may have fall protection requirements with that. And climb safely. Always face the ladder and remain and maintain 3 points of contact, 2 hands and 1 foot, or 2 feet and 1 hand while climbing. Do not overreach. Move the ladder as needed to avoid stretching too far, and beware where you put that ladder. Are you putting it in front of a doorway or a high traffic area? And be wary of overhead power lines, especially when you're using any metal ladders, because you may get electrocuted. Do not overload. Never exceed the maximum load or rating of that ladder. This includes the weight of the user plus any tools or materials. And of course, always follow the manufacturer's guidelines. Where are those manufacturer's guidelines? They're typically on the stickers on the ladder. You know, the ones that everybody rips off and then says, hey, I'm not responsible because I don't know. Well, I don't know. I wasn't told. That's why you need training. And if you want fall protection training, give us a call here at 845-269-5772 and arrange a fall protection training class. So, for Jim Poelzel, or for Safety Wars, I should say, this is Jim Poelzel, and I will see you tomorrow. Have a nice night, everybody. If not tomorrow, then Wednesday. And come on, play for me. Here we go.